Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Enjoying the World Cup? If you want proper analysis, honest opinions, and plenty of laughs along the way, give The Rest Is Football a listen. Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer, and Micah Richards break down the biggest games, the standout moments, and everything happening on and off the pitch with brilliant guests joining them throughout the tournament. Whether you followed football your whole life or you're just getting into it, they'll help you make sense of the drama, the tactics, the joy, and the heartbreak of the World Cup. Listen to The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. You know, I've been rethinking how I style the smallest spaces in my house this summer. Instead of stressing over what won't fit, I've been looking at tons of versatile styles from Bob's Discount Furniture that actually multitask. Whether you're working from home or hosting guests, take that Betty dining set, for example. When it's just me, it's a compact, space-saving setup with a super comfy Bob-apedic seats. But it extends in a snap when company arrives. It comes in four fun colors, boasts over 1,500 five-star reviews, and at just $5.99 for a seven-piece set, you'll actually have a budget left for the dinner party. And if you love that retro chic vibe, they also have the Betty Bedroom Set featuring gorgeous felt-lined storage drawers and another 1,500 five-star reviews. Or if you just want to lounge, check out the Phantom Power Reclining Sofa. It's packed with cup holders, charging ports, and Bob-apedic cushions without taking over your whole living room. For quality furniture and everyday low prices, shop Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Welcome into the Yachts and Audibles Podcast Summer Edition. We're down to our last position group, Eric, diving into player position previews for all the Ducks heading into fall camp, which will start in about a month. We are at the defensive back group. We've debated on how to do this, whether it's cornerbacks by themselves, star by themselves, safety by themselves. Do we lump one of those guys, one of those positions with a linebacker group or collectively as one large group? And that's where we landed. We're going to go all five positions, the two corners, the two safeties, the star position. Buckle up because it's going to be a pretty in-depth discussion around the entire defensive backfield for the Ducks. And Eric, quite honestly, going into this, it's one in which, yeah, they lose some talent. They've got a couple guys gone off to the NFL. Thinneman was a high first round draft pick. Kennedy is on a roster. But nonetheless, this is a group in which I feel like the ceiling's probably as high, if not higher, than it was a year ago. They've reloaded with another portal addition in Coy Parrish to replace Dylan Thinneman. They've got an All-American in Brandon Finney returning. They've got another guy in a transfer portal addition, Carl Williams, who looks like he could be a kind of a sleeper agent stud. And a wide net of young underclass corners, safety, star players that are going to make the competition very, very high. And quite honestly, I think this might be the most competitive unit on Oregon's entire roster from a playing time perspective.
I think that's fair, Matt. There's so many names where you get through them, so many that are blue chip, former blue chip recruits, right? That kind of muddies the conversation, especially when you're relying on, as we'll get to, three rising sophomores, three guys that were starters last year as either true or redshirt freshmen who are now being, you know, who are now taking on their second year as a starter. Usually that's where the most growth takes place, by the way, but also maybe you're a little bit more susceptible when you're still that inexperienced and you only have that 1 year under your belt and there are other younger players kind of coming for it, right? And I think that's sort of the dynamic that Chris Hampton and company have created here. And I don't want to do too much time on the Chris Hampton component of this, because as Matt alluded to, we've got like 20 names we probably need to talk to on this podcast that we're going to be here for a while already. But I do want to say, like, Hampton going from just his position group to coaching the whole defense, right? Like, is there any level of concern about anything about that adjustment, Matt? Of like, could him being more eye in the sky, focused on all 11 as opposed to just his five, like, could that be a negative thing in any way? Or is there any level of worry about how this impacts this unit? Do we feel like maybe it strengthens it because now the guy leading it is leading the whole defense, and so he's going to, you know, try to maximize his unit within that, you know, within what they're trying to do out there? Like, where do we fall on, I guess, just Chris Hampton really quickly in terms of like how this impacts the team's defensive backs?
Well, I'm not really too worried here, in large part because Rashad Wadud is still back.
Sure.
And he's a highly regarded coach. Mario Cristobal tried to hire him away this offseason. That obviously did not happen. And I also go back to the fact that Chris Hampton, while it wasn't here at Oregon, it was at Tulane, coached defensive backs and was a defensive coordinator.
True.
At the same time, and was performed well enough in that role to get him the job as the DB coach at Oregon. So I think obviously the pressures, the stakes, the level of competition, the expectation, the standard, whatever you want to say, is higher at Oregon doing both than it was at Tulane. That has to be acknowledged.
Sure.
But he's done it before, and so I'm not really as concerned maybe as we may be about it happening in another time where it's a first-time coordinator at, you know, getting promoted and how can he handle both roles. This is Hampton's not going to be a first-time coordinator. So he's kind of gone through the rigors before, and I think he's got an elite second lieutenant or top lieutenant in Wadud to help manage the room. And I pulled up the staff here, staff list, and just the size of the analysts, the defensive analysts roster at Oregon has already expanded under Dan Lanning when he first got here. And now since his time in Eugene and the success and the reinvestment more and more into the program, he's expanded that like assistant analyst off-field position department in the coaching staff. So I feel like Hampton's going to have plenty of eyes. He's going to have plenty of ideas, plenty of help. And so for me, at least, I don't have a lot of worry here.
Yeah, I feel similar. I just thought it was worth asking the question. Where do we want to start? There's a ton of names we could go through here.
Yeah, let's start with the starters that are returning. There's two of them. Oh, I guess there's three of them, actually.
There's three
when we count safety as well. I was thinking cornerback for some reason. But Brandon Finney, Ife Obadigwu, and Aaron Flowers, all sophomores, all returning starters. Finney was a true freshman starter, and then Flowers and Ife both redshirted in 2024, won starting jobs in 2025. Now all three return in 2026 as a trio of underclassmen who I think all have NFL aspirations, are all going to have NFL scouts watching them play. Finney's obviously the big name of the three, and they're all big names, but Finney's the All-American that's returning as a freshman. I look at this group and think it's been a really long time where we felt like, hey, they've got multiple dudes that are legitimate bona fide stars at their positions with more than 2 years of starting experience of remaining after this season. I go back to under Mario Cristobal when they had Diomede Lenore and Thomas Graham start as true freshmen, and just think back to how good they were as juniors in that third year and just dynamic they were, how good Lenore was in his senior season when he played during the COVID year. Thomas Graham obviously sat. But I go back to that group and just think that's when you have that same level of continuity, it's hard to recruit for, to backfill. But that level of talent returning year over year is invaluable, and that's where Oregon's at right now, where it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if this time next year we're talking about Oregon having two of the five best cornerbacks in college football next season.
Well, then let's start then with Brandon Finney. And he's, I think, as you noted, the most, you know, he's got the most accolades. He had the best debut starting season by a corner, maybe, and I don't know. And like to go way back, Matt, as a true freshman, to even see somebody who started this many games, and certainly somebody who can contributed so well. And it's funny because I was, you know, in preparation for this, just kind of looking through some of the game logs here of how teams approached him. And it seemed like the back half of the season, teams were a little more aggressive, had a little bit more success against him in coverage, and had a little bit more success, by the way, going over the top. And I bring that up because it leads us to what his own kind of focal point or offseason goal was, which was to get faster. And I remember him talking about back in April of, he basically got with Kyle Bolton, the speed coach, and they worked on his running stride, and they kind of retaught him how to run, which sounds a little bit crazy. Sounds like, man, that's a pretty large undertaking to try to attempt in one off season, but makes sense in the context of, like, you know, first eight games of 2025, he allowed four reception. He was targeted 18 times. The back seven after those first eight games, he was targeted 32 times. He gave up 16 receptions. He had multiple games where he gave up more than one reception. He was holding people without catches in general for most of that first half of the season. Again, he had four receptions against him the first nine games, 16 the last seven, or last six, I should say. Not to say he didn't play down the back half, but play well down the back half, but I do think it's notable that he came out of that season kind of feeling like, hey, there's some stuff to work on. And he's taken that ownership to himself. We saw the spring game kind of up and down. DeCorian had his way with him a little bit. He also had his own successes for sure. But Finney is a player who I think we all can acknowledge has such a high ceiling.
Yes.
I'm curious to see what that next step looks like. And it's encouraging to hear he's motivated in those own terms of, hey, sure, I had the three turnover game against Texas Tech. I had the pick six against Indiana the first time. You know, no one was completing passes on me for half the season, but he still comes out of it feeling like there's a lot to work on.
Yeah, the drive, that's what makes great players turn into elite guys. And he certainly has it. And it's not going to surprise me in the slightest that when he returns to Oregon in 2027, he has the year that we think he will in 2026. It's like a bona fide lock that he's college football's cornerback one. Like, yeah. That's not going to surprise me in the slightest. Shifting over to the other side at corner, Ife Obadigwu started 12 games for the Ducks in 2025, played in all 15. And quite honestly, it was a really solid redshirt freshman season. He was really good for most of the year. Just unfortunately for him, his two worst games came against the same team. And one was a marquee matchup at Austin Stadium against Indiana. And then the other one was the biggest game of the year against Indiana in the Peach Bowl. And he was picked on. He was targeted. He was self-admitted of that. I think – A, it's big situational awareness, maturity level to A, recognize that. A, I need to be better. This is the really good team that we played twice. I was not good in either one of them. I have to be better next season. That takes a lot, especially for a young player to admit and to come out and publicly say. That shows me that there's a lot of, I guess, character and commitment to getting better, putting himself kind of on blast a little bit. I don't know if he's necessarily like fighting for his job. I also don't necessarily think that it's like, hey, you can have four or five bad games over the course of 12 games and you're going to keep your starting spot like a Finney would. I think the talent's there, but I also think that if he's probably going to have, you know, there's probably going to be a little bit of watchful eye on him, and he's going to get targeted a ton because teams aren't going to throw at Finney a lot.
Yeah. And for me, the couple of things, penalties were really high last year. It's seven penalties in coverage. That was twice as much as anybody on this defense. That needs to be improved. You know, and a lot of those happened in postseason play, right? Like three of those happened against James Madison, Texas Tech, or Indiana. So there's a need to stop being quite as aggressive. I think everybody likes watching corners that are physical and don't back down, because corners that back down, they get beat all the time. And in coverage, if we look at just the totality of it, probably surprises people to hear this, He gave up fewer yards, fewer receptions, was targeted far less, also played fewer snaps than Brandon Finney. So there was kind of a trade-off here of, hey, he didn't necessarily get beat crazy bad for most of the season. Yes, the Indiana game, the first time we brought that up, Matt, gave up 3 receptions, 28 yards. He never gave up more than 30 yards in a game this season, though, based upon what PFF's got, 34, what I'm looking at in front of me here. It was the penalties that kind of stood out to me, and penalties that came in big moments, penalties against teams that threw the ball down the field, right? Like that combination of, like, I think when I think about Iffy, he is so physical, he is probably a little more susceptible to get beaten deep, right? And so, like, if he can't get that initial punch, that initial push to kind of get the guy off his route, he's going to have a hard time getting back there, and that's where some of his issues at the point of attack kind of arose. But, you know, I look at him, and we'll talk about some of these other names, and to your question about, like, if his job is susceptible, like, I think both Iffy and Flowers are going to have to hold off some really talented young players. I expect both of them to come out of those competitions as the starters. But, like, Naeem Offer was a better, you know, higher rated recruit than both Obadegwu and Finney. I wouldn't be shocked if ultimately he ends up winning out and locking down a starting job at some point in the season in the secondary. You know, I'm not sure. I'm not going to say where it's going to come from necessarily, but probably Iffy Obadegwu's role would be the one that he would be gunning for, have the best chance to take. But there's a lot of growth potential with these guys too. And I think it's easy to get caught up on, like, hey, like, Naeem Offord's on this roster. Iffy's job is up for grabs, but don't get it twisted and suggest, like, hey, this guy was a bad player. He played poorly last year. I think there's a lot to like with Iffy Obadegwu, and I think there's a reason to expect, whether it's Obadegwu or Offord, like, Finney opposite of one of those guys is going to be one of the better corner tandems in the country in 2026 and then again in 2027.
Moving to the next group is Aaron Flowers at safety. A guy that he played in 2 games in 2024 and then started all 15 games for the Ducks in 2025. And Flowers is going to be a guy that he's coming out and he's in position to be the starter. But I think it's going to be curious of how much can he grow, how much can he get better at. He also got picked on a little bit by Indiana. That was another guy that really struggled in that situation. And can you be better there? Can you make the next jump? Can you make the plays that are needed in the bigger games? I think he can. I think he will. And again, this is another guy that's played a ton of experience. And I think this is why it's going to be a super competitive group. Is there's a bunch of dudes that are behind all these guys, Flowers included, that are worthy, that have that the physical attributes to take a job. But that the guys right now who are returning starters, they have the same thing, and they've shown it. They've got the production, and that kind of competition, whether it makes Flowers the better player or someone else behind him, whoever wins that job and keeps that job, or I should say keep it, is going to be a really damn good football player. And I think, you know, for Flowers individually, there's an opportunity here where he might be able to kind of crack his name and create a hype around him that he's viewed as maybe not the best college safety in 2027 going into the year, but being viewed as, like, hey, he's a top 5 safety in the position, and he's a guy that NFL scouts are going to be looking at. Like, and that's what 2026 for him individually could be about.
Yeah, and he needs to get better in coverage, right? I mean, you look at his PFF grades: elite run defender, good open field tackler, not good coverage player. You know, and the coverage stats, you know, we kind of already touched on some of it with Iffy and the Indiana games, but Flowers got absolutely roasted in the Peach Bowl. 3 touchdowns in that game, gave up 4 receptions. It's a tough game for him, right? And I think he's aware of that. He needs to improve in that area. We know, again, we know what his strengths are. We know what his weaknesses are. He knows what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are. And I do wonder, you know, we talk about Flowers and kind of what he presented as a starter in 2025. And I threw this out before, I without, like, a clear defined nickel, like, without knowing exactly who that's going to be, maybe this is just a silly thing I should stop bringing up, but, like, Flowers, the way he kind of presents himself, you know, the way he's played, maybe fits in that role where he could be a really valuable player to have up in the box as a run defender, shorter patterns, but that may eliminate some of that concerns about what he can do defending some of the passes over the top where he had some problems. So I'm intrigued by Aaron Flowers. I'm a big fan of Aaron Flowers. I think he's one of the better defensive backs on this team. I'm curious if he's playing at the spot that makes the most sense for what he's shown. And maybe he'll surprise us in 2026 and really take a step in coverage and become a better all-around player. And this will seem like a silly conversation to be having in the middle of the offseason. But I do kind of wonder if like his skill set maybe fits better closer to the line of scrimmage as opposed to somebody further back. And that would open up, in theory, like a Trey McNutt or a Jet Washington or some of these names we're going to talk about to maybe get another starting spot at the back end.
Moving over to the other safety spot, I think it's very clear he's the assumed starter. You know, Dan Lanning and Chris Hampton have said he's the starter, but very much like other jobs before, like Dylan Thinman last season, Coy Parrish, going to be the starter at one of the other safety spots. And transfer from Minnesota, was a two-way guy his freshman year, played a little bit on offense as a sophomore again, but has made it very clear he's coming to Oregon to first and foremost focus on defense, become the better defensive player, kind of maximize his talents there, do whatever's asked of him, but really be here for defense. And I think there's an opportunity. We've had Cooper Petegna on the show. We've seen the mock drafts from other outlets as well. Yeah. This is probably another situation where fans probably need to be prepared that it's a one-on-one situation with Coy Parrish. He comes in, he has a big growth moment during the offseason, gets developed, has a big season, and is off to the NFL as a first or second round draft pick. I think that's a very real possibility with Coy Parrish.
We've already seen it with Dylan Thienemann, with Christian Gonzalez, where you transfer to Oregon after having been a really standout player at a smaller program where the exposure might have been a little bit less. You come to Oregon, you have a showcase season, you have more eyes on you, you're playing with better players, and you end up being a first-round draft pick, right? I think that's the vision or the hope for Coy at Oregon. And I'll be really interested to see kind of where he grows as a player. I mean, he was so dynamic as a true freshman. I thought last year, at least the production was a little bit down. And I'm sure if we talked to Minnesota people, they would tell us it was probably similar to our conversations about Mateo, where you go from being kind of out of nowhere, you have a lot of production. The next year, teams are kind of more focused on where you're at, what you're doing, finding ways to avoid getting, you know, kind of involved with you. But he is a player that does need to kind of have a bounce back from a production perspective. And I fully expect he will. And I think the athleticism he provides, which is why I'm kind of like intrigued by a Trey McNutt or a Jet Washington or some of these more athletic safeties, not to say Aaron Flowers is a stiff by any means, but if you could pair two of those guys together at the back end, you'd have so much coverage ability and explosiveness. And, you know, we saw what Dylan Thienemann did in the combine in terms of running the 40, the vertical jump, all those testing numbers that ultimately led to him being a first round pick. I'm intrigued by what Coy looks like in comparison. Cause you know, it was funny because before Dylan goes to Indy and just lights the world on fire, my perception was Coy might've even been a little bit better of an athlete. I'm going to back all the way off that claim because I don't know if he's running sub 4.3 and jumping 40 plus inches, but he's certainly a player that will be reminiscent in terms of some of those physical traits and the way he plays the game. And I think it's really exciting for Oregon to develop this pipeline where, hey, year in and year out, if there's an elite safety, elite defensive back playing at a smaller school that wants that opportunity to kind of showcase themselves, you know, inroads to an NFL, early NFL draft pick, that Oregon is becoming that school. And Parrish certainly feels like a player that will kind of continue that lineage at Oregon.
The star spot, the starter here. Do we all agree it's Carl Williams?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's the one we should talk about, but I don't. It's the hardest one to predict on the whole team.
Yes, it's the hardest one, and I think if we had this, if we were forced to pick a guy, it's probably going to be the veteran Carl Williams.
Yeah, I think so.
Transfer from Baylor. Is going to have 2 years of eligibility at Oregon if he chooses to use them. Sneaky addition late in the process for the Ducks to the portal. Kind of went unnoticed. Very similar to Jaden Kennedy last season. And the question becomes, can he just replicate what he did and turn into a very stout and productive star player for the Ducks? But this is one I agree with you, Eric. Like, if there's any position that's open for someone else to get the job, it's the star spot. But really for him, I guess to defend Carl Williams here is there really isn't an established player behind him. So it's going to have to come from a guy that's either making a position change or is jumping into the college ranks for the first time in his first year, and just it clicks, just like it did for Brandon Finney.
Yeah, right. And so that you're right. That's the case for Carl Williams. It's also why, like, in theory, and Aaron Flowers making a move. And I'm again, I'll stop bringing this one up because it's probably getting old for listeners. But just like they're so lack. Nickel is such a hard one to peg, you know. And to your point, like, it's hard to make the case for someone other than Carl Williams, except for to say, like, oh, Devon Benjamin is just going to be amazing as a freshman, which there's a lot of positive reviews. There's certainly a reasonable expectation he could be a good player based upon his recruiting ranking on the film and kind of everything he was as a high school player. But he's never played college football before. Do we want to mark him in as a starter? I mean, that feels like a leap to take. So yeah. I understand starting with Carl Williams. And I also think, like, you have to realize Carl Williams, yeah, he's experienced. He's also somebody who's, like, dealt with pretty significant injuries. Missed the end back half of 2024 with a knee injury, barely was able to play at all a year ago. It was kind of pretty, I think, bad from what I heard in terms of how he played. When he did get on the field, it was very, very, very limited. But the player he was in 2023 when he was a freshman All-American is kind of what you're banking on here. Looked to be a really good coverage athlete that year, 83.5 coverage grade. Is that who he is still, right? Has he lost a step? He's a bigger athlete than Jaden Kennedy, right? He's like 6'1", 190 pounds. Jaden was, what, 5'10", 5'11", 165, 170. Like, this is a bigger athlete playing this position. I'm okay with that, but I'm just curious on, can he hold up in coverage? Or is this going to be kind of one of those situations? And maybe this is what ends up happening at nickel, of like, Carl is really good, as a run defender, kind of playing in space on first and second down, and you take him off the field and you switch to some personnel that is a little bit more capable in coverage. Because I'm a little bit worried about where he's at there based upon the knee injuries, and maybe that'll be a crazy thing to bring up. But this is – when you're talking about Carl Williams, this is not like a surefire proven situation of, like, he is not quite Parrish or Dylan Thiedemann where he comes in coming off of, like, breakout seasons. He's coming in where his best football was played in 2023. He got hurt in 2024, barely played last year. And you're just hoping he's able to kind of hit the ground running here in 2026. So, very intriguing player for this room, without question.
Then it gets interesting here. Of who do we tap as the top non-starter on this roster? I think the first glance, maybe this is where we'll go, is Naeem Offord.
Yep, that's where my head's at.
Of the sophomore cornerback. He played in all 15 games for the Ducks. He didn't start any. But if we're going to sit here and we're going to talk about Ife Obadigwu, if there's even the slightest crack of a door open for losing his job, it's going to probably come from Naeem Offord and his ability to force his way onto the football field. And this is a guy that I think early on in the season probably wasn't ready to play a ton. But as the course of the year went on, his snap counts improved. I'm sure his PFF grades went up. And by the end of the year, he was playing a lot more than he was at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and he ended up at 245 snaps to Ife's 423, which obviously Ife played a lot more. But 245 is not that's almost a dozen per game, you know, in terms, because as he played more than a dozen a game. Sorry, my math is not checking here. As he played only 12 games. So when you look at him, or this is according to PFF, I think you said 15. Well, it says 12 here, but this is somebody who has a ton of upside, right? And we all know that. We know he's the highest rated corner prospect the school has ever signed. We know physically the traits leap off the page. I thought he looked really good in the spring game as well. Does he put it all together? And if he does that make him a better player than Ife Obadigwu? And I think the exciting part is we can spend all this time debating who starts, who doesn't start. This is an old Jared Mack throwback. We have to remember they're all on the same team, right? Like, at the end of the day, it's a really good problem to have, where maybe Naeem Offord ends up being your second best corner. Shoot, maybe crazy development takes place and he's, you know, starts a bunch of games and he's even a better player than Brandon Finney Jr. I don't think that's, like, I'd be shocked by that outcome, but that's not totally outside of the realm of possibilities based upon what people thought of Offord coming out of high school. Is that growth going to happen, though? And it's really hard to kind of have a sense of where this is going to be headed. But we also know, I think, like, these three guys are all former top 40, top 35 kind of recruits, have elite physical tools and could be, you know, early NFL draft picks. And just having three of them on the team as sophomores together is like really exciting, right? And frankly, I think pretty unprecedented at this school to have this type of talent at one position group all grouped together as sophomores. Like, there's a ton of upside for this group, not only in 2026, but also as we get to 2027. And Offord is certainly just as capable of these other two of taking that step and becoming a superstar caliber corner, at least in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Like, I think there's as good of a chance that Offord is a starter next season for the Ducks or this upcoming season. And it wouldn't shock me in the slightest either. If this is a guy that PFF grades extremely high, this is a guy that receives some kind of postseason accolade either. Like, none of that would surprise me. I don't think if I had to pick, I would probably put Obidigwu as the most likely candidate. But if you told me, hey, if he played amazing and won the job, like, it would not surprise me. Got all the tangibles. On the other side, they brought in Aaron Scott Jr., a portal addition, a former five-star recruit, played at Ohio State. He's an experienced guy. He's a junior. And it's one in which, for me at least, the talent, the skill, all of that makes sense to add. But knowing how young this room was and knowing where the talent is right now on the roster, it was a little bit interesting that they felt like, hey, let's go get a guy that's going to be a junior and bring him in. And I think this just goes into Dan Lanning's philosophy of it's our job to develop you and your job to win the job and get the starting spot and stay there. And it's my job now as a head coach to find someone that's better.
And
it feels very much like that.
No, I think you nailed it, right? And like, this is still a former five-star player. And I think you just take players of that caliber, assuming they're within the price range, assuming they want to come to Oregon, assuming they want to be a part of this, you're never going to turn down players of this caliber in my mind. And frankly, this defensive back room is so incredibly talented, especially at corner with the size. I mean, Aaron Scott Jr., 6'195", smaller than a couple of these guys, but still a pretty good sized corner. Spring game was kind of up and down, right? Or at least you remember some kind of not so great moments. Obviously, we remember what Evan Stewart was able to do, getting off the line, getting upfield and outrunning him for the long touchdown. But I take a shot on a guy like this every time. And this is a player who was playing a decent amount at Ohio State. He wasn't starting. He wasn't like solely in the rotation in big moments, but played over 100 snaps last year. Ceiling remains really high. And you have 2 years with him. And frankly, again, if you really wanted to, you could use a redshirt year, maybe as soon as this year, and try to space this out a little bit and hope that maybe he can be somebody that a couple of years from now, when some of these other players kind of age out, is available. But I'm intrigued by just like, you're right, that addition is kind of strange in context of like, you've got the two starters coming back as sophomores. You got another player who's a sophomore who you think really highly of. Why are you going out to take a player like this? And I think it's just it's a depth piece. It's a player that has upside. And like, also, and I know it doesn't quite work like this because I imagine he wasn't going back to Ohio State to begin with, but you take a player like this who could have been a contributor at one of your biggest rivals, and maybe you're doing a little bit of diminishing an opponent as well here. So
helping yourself while hurting your opponent.
Sure.
Next on the list, Trey McNutt, a redshirt freshman safety. And look, former five-star guy that I think could have won the job last season for the Ducks if it wasn't for a major leg injury suffered during training camp towards the end of training camp that knocked him out for the entire year. Didn't play a single game. I don't think it's fair to expect that, you know, hey, like, he didn't even play a snap. He didn't win the job officially. He was never named the starter. It's unfair to, like, throw out the Aaron Flowers is fighting for his job now that Trey McNutt's healthy. Flowers has a year of production history behind himself that was pretty good. But I think McNutt's going to make things interesting just by how much can he play? How much can he not necessarily take away from a starter perspective of Flowers, but how much value does he add where they don't need Flowers to play 90% of the snaps like he did or whatever number it was? Where's McNutt's role grow and where does it take him, honestly? And how quickly will he get back to pre-injury levels if he's not already there, which he could be. But again, this is another guy physically, he's gifted. He's got all the attributes. Just how quickly can he get himself up to speed?
Yeah, he's one of those where it's kind of like a sliding doors moment. If you go back and say he doesn't get hurt, how much does that change the way we're talking about Flowers? We're talking about McNutt. We're talking about the safety room in general. How does that change everything? I think it's really interesting in retrospect. But you know, in this world where he didn't play at all last year and was hurt, I think it is reasonable to expect Aaron Flowers is your starting safety, while also acknowledging the ceiling, some of the things we were hearing about McNutt last fall camp suggest this could be a starting caliber player in his own right. And it just becomes a matter of maybe situation and fit, comes maybe a matter of like who has the most confidence. Like I think these two could be in competition for a while this fall, or it could be a case of like what's happened in the past where you pick the guy and you just stick with them. And that's sort of what has happened previously where they just kind of land on, and it was obviously Flowers last year and he ends up playing a ton of snaps. I wouldn't count out Trey McNutt though. And one of the things that stands out to me is just the athleticism here. Ran sub 11 in the 100 meters multiple times in high school. 10.82 was the best. Ran 21.74 in the 200. This is a really high end safety athlete. And that kind of athleticism, which I was getting at earlier, if you could pair that with what Coy Parrish could do long term, you could pair it with like a Jet Washington. You just have so much range and athleticism back there, which I think is clearly something that they're intrigued by. But I'm not sure it's this year that we see Trey McNutt be a starter. But gosh, I'm going to expect we're going to see some moments where we feel like he should be, right? That may be the kind of the year where we're going to see with Trey McNutt, where it feels like, man, all these tantalizing traits, they show up here, they show up there. He's not on the field quite as much as we'd like to see. But with Parrish most likely gone after 26, maybe we're seeing kind of the future with Flowers and McNutt, or McNutt and Washington, or whatever combination we end up seeing. But I'm still really, really high and intrigued by this player, but not quite sure where this is all going to play out based upon how limited his playing experience is to this point.
Another move to another spot on the secondary here is Jet Washington. And this is, I think, going to be one of the big question marks of the true freshman, five-star recruit from Bishop Corman. Where does he land on the depth chart? How is he used? What positions does he play? What kind of position versatility do they use with him? This feels like, hey, we don't need you to play to be successful, but if you can become a high usage successful player, even if it's in a niche role like Nasir Wyatt was last season, that elevates the secondary as a whole sky high. Like this is in case where we don't need you, but man, it would be awesome if you can get to that level where you're doing something at an elite level.
Yeah, no, you know, I like how you put that. I like the comparison to Nasir, of just like somebody who may be in a specialist sort of role, really thrives early, and then the kind of path clears later for them to play, kind of a more complete or I guess more in-depth role. That sort of feels like we're at with Jet. I did my predictions of kind of like who was going to play or not play as true freshman in 2026 earlier this week. I had Jet as a too close to call just because of all these other names we're mentioning, right? And we haven't even gotten to Peyton Woodyard yet, but I mean, you got Flowers, you got Parrish, you got McNutt, you got Woodyard. Those are four guys who've been here longer or have played college football more than Jet Washington, who are all like really good players in their own right. Like, is it fair to expect Jet Washington as a true freshman in a room that's full of veterans or players at least who have played a little bit more to really expect him to take that leap? It's certainly possible, right? Like elite talent doesn't get shelved, right? They find their way onto the field. We see it every year. We saw it a lot last year, right, at Oregon. Like this was and it was unexpected how many freshmen wound up contributing based upon past history. But he's a hard one to kind of peg, similar to McNutt, where you know the physical tools are through the roof, the length, the size. You're right. I think there could be some fun ways to utilize this kind of an athlete in a variety of roles, you know, with that length and just the way he plays. He's so incredibly physical. Just, I mean, he's going to deplete at least three or four guys this year that are going to turn some heads, I think. But will that be, will all of that be enough to really separate himself to earn more than, I don't know, 150 snaps this year? I'm probably a little skeptical of that based upon what's in front of him, but shoot, we might get to fall camp and he'll be the talk of camp and everybody will say, you can't keep this guy off the field, which was kind of what happened with Brandon Finney last year, where this point a year ago, I think we were saying, oh, intriguing young player, got all the, you know, the physical tools to be an elite player, but it's probably not going to be right away. You get to fall camp, everybody's like, actually, you guys need to be watching number four. He's the guy to look at. Maybe that's going to be the same situation come fall. But it's certainly at this point, it's hard to really pinpoint how he fits in with all the talent they have around.
The next tier guys are all three of them going to be younger players. I guess Peyton Woodyard would be a junior as well, so there's a fourth. But Dorian Brew, a redshirt freshman cornerback who also missed the season because of an injury. Devin Jackson is a freshman at safety. Devin Benjamin is a freshman at the kind of star safety cornerback, kind of utility guy. And then Peyton Woodyard is the junior. Woodyard's already redshirted. For the other three, it could be and so has Brew, but it could be
– Woodyard has not redshirted, actually.
Oh, yeah, correct. That is right. Woodyard is not redshirted. But the point being is these four guys could all be development pieces. They could all grow into a guy with a bona fide clear-cut role, you know, pushing for starter snaps, or they could be, you know, just slotted down further down on the depth chart. There's a wide range here for these four guys, and where they kind of fit within the lineup for Oregon next season.
Yeah, I think Woodyard and Benjamin, we can just talk about a little differently than the other two based upon maybe unreasonable or just kind of unfair expectations that those two are going to have a much clearer path to playing time. Benjamin right now, like, has a chance to start, I think, at that star position. You know, again, we talked about Carl Williams. We talked about some of the uncertainty there. As a true freshman, it feels like a reach to suggest he's going to be a day one starter sight unseen, essentially. You know, we watched the spring game. We saw a little bit of what he could do there. I think more impressive than not, but such a small sample size. But he's certainly in that conversation. And I think there's a chance that this could be a guy who plays a lot this year, parlays that into a starting role the next year, or even he ends up being the guy by the end of the season. Woodyard has a much lower ceiling to me. I think he's one of the high floor, low ceiling kind of guys in terms of how I look at him. Entering his third year, never really blown me away. Never really been somebody who's like separated as a player who's going to play a ton. So, but he's also the oldest, most experienced safety in this room in terms of just like, I guess he and Flowers are both part of that same class in 2024. So, you know, sharing that role, but he's been here for a while. And I think I always discount him and what he's capable of doing. And that's probably unfair, but no, I don't think he'll be a starter. Do I think he'll be a valuable part of the secondary? Probably. I think there's going to be some room there to grow. Jackson and Brew, I would be surprised if either was a contributor. Maybe I'm sleeping on Brew, but there's just, you know, with when we have names like Obadegu and Offer and Finney, and even throw Aaron Scott in there, Brew is a big time prospect, a big time recruit. He just feels like maybe he's a step behind these other guys, and maybe that'll become something that we reflect upon and think was wrong as we assess things this season. And maybe he's going to be a guy who contributes, but for whatever reason, I think it feels like he's maybe cornerback four or five right now, and cornerback four or five usually doesn't carry too much of a role over the course of a season.
And then there's the last group here of scholarship guys. Maybe we should have included Xavier Larice in this group because we don't really know. He sounds like he had a good spring, but I think it's probably there's probably just as good of a chance that he redshirts and maybe plays one or two games as well as him redshirting and playing seven. Trey Watson, another addition that's probably looking like he's probably going to face for a development or maybe a redshirt season. Azel Benang, another candidate as well. Zach Gresham's a senior, has played a lot of football as a walk-on for the Ducks. Special teams kind of ace, but just envisioning him having some kind of marquee role within the 11-man defense just doesn't seem likely at this time. Cruz rushing played in four games last season as a walk-on. Again, another guy that just feels like probably similar role here. Development pieces, and that's not a bad thing. That's not to say they can't contribute down the road. It's just this is a unit that's just completely stacked in talent.
Yeah, it is. And Watson as a junior college transfer, I felt that was an interesting take at the time just because of the fact that your starting corners are all younger than him. Like, what's the vision? What's kind of the plan with him? I think is a question worth asking. You know, obviously a player they really liked late in the process, and maybe it was as simple as we think he's a good player with some upside. Let's take him, but doesn't really fit kind of the way the room is working. And maybe a path will become clear later. But I'm kind of skeptical of whether or not this is going to be somebody we really ever hear much from. Beneg, I think you have the same curiosity as you do with Benjamin of like, these are the two guys working behind Carl Williams at nickel. Like, Benjamin's a more highly rated player. Beneg was also a guy who got a big bump at the end of, you know, the recruiting rankings, you know, former Harvard commit, also has ties to Chris Hampton, right? Like, he and his dad, Hampton and Beneg's father played college football at South Carolina together. So not that there's going to be favoritism or anything, but clearly Hampton was confident in this player. Again, I think he's probably third in the star competition right now, assuming Williams, Benjamin, and Benog, and Grisham, I guess, are the three were the players who are working at that position during the spring game. So I kind of think there's a path there, but probably not with him. And then the last name was Larice. I really liked his tape, right? I mean, like, played all over the field, bunch of different roles down in Florida. I just think him and Devin Jackson and maybe even Jet Washington as true freshmen are like, there's a lot of good football ahead of these guys. It's probably unlikely it's immediately. And especially with the glut of younger talent here, I'm just kind of looking at it going like, there's only rules for three or four of these safeties and probably only two of them are going to play big snap counts. Kind of a reach to expect a Larice, a Jackson, and again, maybe even a Jet Washington to really pull out, you know, anything substantial in 2026. But we'll see. Talented players sometimes differentiate. Maybe that's the story that we'll see.
Looking at the collective unit as a group here, I think it's as loaded as it's been in a long time.
Yeah.
I think there's a handful of future NFL players on this roster, multiple guys that are going to be first-round draft picks or could be first-round draft picks. It's as, like I said at the beginning, it's as competitive as it's been in a long time at this spot for playing time, for starter reps, whatever. And that's only going to make this group better. And I think, Eric, from a short-term and a long-term perspective, this is probably the healthiest room on roster. And the expectations are sky high.
There's not a senior in this group. You know, I mean, this whole group could be back. Like, literally every name on that we just ran through could be back in 27. Like, that's what we're looking at here. Is that likely? No, there'll be transfers. Parrish probably, if he plays as well as expected, could be a one and done. But there's a lot of reason to be excited about the short term and the long term. And if you look at what they've done in the recruiting cycle, right, with some of their top commitments coming from defensive backs once again, like Chris Hampton has. You know, you wonder, we talked earlier about kind of some of the role responsibility change and how that impacts things. But like, it's borne out with him in terms of development and certainly from a recruiting perspective, like it's not even an open conversation. Like, this is the most talented based on recruiting rankings you've ever seen here. You know, and if you just like really quickly, like they have almost all these are 4 or 5-star recruits, like just across the board. You know, Finney, Scott, Flowers, Iffy, Naeem Offord, Jet Washington, Trey McNutt. All those guys were at one point during their recruiting cycles 5-star prospects. Not that they all finished there, but at one point, all those guys reached that level. That just speaks to when you've got half a dozen names that you could run through and say they have that distinction, that's just a different era of Oregon football that we're not used to, where you could talk about having half a dozen 5-stars in your secondary. And again, then the rest of the guys are top 100, top 150, top 247, 4-star recruits. Like, there's a ton of talent here and a lot of reasons to be excited and a lot of different body types and skill sets. And you have to think that Chris Hampton is really excited about kind of what he has collectively right now.
It's a good time to be a fan of the Oregon Ducks, and especially because of the secondary and the talent here. We're going to break it all down as fall camp gets here. We'll have full coverage of the Ducks and the secondary's performances throughout the season by Eric, myself, and the rest of the group at DuckTerritory.com. But this is going to do it for us here on this summer series, kind of position by player review for Oregon football going into the 2026 season. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll continue to come pump out more content around the football program as fall camp gets closer and closer. But for now, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Sweet.